Weekend Mornings with Glenn Van Zutphen. Replay from Money FM 89.3. Weekend Mornings with Glenn Van Zutphen on Money FM 89.3.
Welcome to Weekend Mornings here on Money FM. So happy to have Ritu Marish in the studio with me this morning, the international keynote speaker, executive coach, and author of The Leader's Block. Good morning, Ritu.
Good morning, Glenn.
Boy, it feels like Sunday morning, doesn't it?
It does.
So happy to have you here.
So happy to be here.
Yeah. You know, Ritu, you are trying to take a unique angle on the human side of leadership, talking about challenges, dilemmas, setbacks of leaders in your coaching practice. You know, you've had 20 years of corporate experience working with big MNCs. You ran a multi-million dollar P&L. What pushed you into this role of leadership advisor, of coach, of trainer, of author, of keynote speaker?
Right. I mean, that's a loaded question there. we'll try and break it down.
Yeah.
So rightly said, because I had the corporate experience, I saw leadership in very close quarters. And I had the privilege and opportunity to work with really great leaders at Procter & Gamble and then GE Capital, which up till some time was called the mecca of, you know, growing leaders. But one thing I realized as I was going through that leadership thing, that while people learned leadership on the job, there was a way to accelerate that if they got a good coach or if they got a good mentor. And that's exactly when I completed 20 years in the corporate world, I realized I could do what I was doing, continue doing, or could I take whatever I've learned and then start sharing it outside?
Yeah.
So that was my major reason for making the switch from being a corporate leader to then going and becoming a coach and then a speaker.
Those types of skills and that type of coaching environment is so needed in every company, no matter the size, right? Small, large, in between.
Absolutely.
Startups.
Absolutely. And then the other thing I realized is that as I stepped on the other side, as I became a coach, I realized there weren't many avenues where people could talk about the real challenges that they go through in their leadership journey. Because, you know, the corporate world really teaches you really a lot of things, but it also teaches you how to fake it, fake it very well. So even if you're really feeling miserable, if you're not doing so well, but you've got to put up that brave front, that smile. But underneath that, whatever turmoil you're going through, you don't have too many people to speak to about. And that's where I realized there's a big need for people to speak what they're going through, to speak about their challenges, and then get it in the open to say it's absolutely fine. Everybody is going through.
What are the typical challenges you see, and do they differ depending on job title or job, the level of the job that somebody's doing, for example, a fresh grad versus a CEO?
Absolutely. I think I would divide, you know, a leadership journey in broad three parts. So the first is when you're really starting out. You know, you've just started off after your graduation or after whatever, you know, professional degree you've got. You come with a lot of excitement. You come with a lot of expectation. And you're willing to learn a lot more. So you go
right.
and ask questions. You reach out to people.
Not afraid to be vulnerable
exactly,
in that way, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Because, you know, you have nothing to lose. You're just going to learn. So that is one part of the journey. That's typically, I mean, very broadly defining about first 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, when you want to experiment, you want to go and ask people. Then comes the middle level, which is where you've got certain experience. You are now willing to leverage that experience and say, okay, I've grown so far with this skill. Can I continue to do that? And actually, that's where a lot of people also tend to fail because they continue to do what they did in the first 10 years.
And it's just not applicable anymore,
exactly.
Right?
You know, so you're a great individual contributor till now, but now you start managing teams, and which is a totally different skill. But people don't prepare so much for that. They think, oh, it's soft skill, I'll learn on the job. But like that's the hardcore skill you need then as a people manager, right?
Sure, sure.
So that's the middle management. And then is the senior management. And middle management could be anything, again, 10 to 12, and I'm being very tentative about it. And then is the senior management where you're expected to know it all. In reality, that's not possible.
Yeah.
So those are three phases.
Yeah. Do you find that the senior managers, for example, are more or less willing to reach out for help? Because sometimes I think there's a perception when you get to the corner office, you don't think anybody can teach you anything.
Yeah.
Do you find that? Or I mean, of course, many leaders are now quite evolved these days and realize they don't know what they don't know. What is your experience there?
So you're right. Senior leaders obviously find it more difficult to ask for help. And there's a reason for that. You know, one, of course, as you rightly said, sometimes they think they know it all. And maybe in their company, they do know it all, you know, so that's fine. But they may not know what's going outside, what's going on outside, right? So the external view. But to your point, leaders are evolving now. I'm seeing more and more in my coaching practice, senior leaders saying, I need a coach, or willing to talk about it, you know, willing to open up and say, yeah, I may not know it all. But that's the struggle. In fact, earlier this year, I wrote an article for Forbes saying what makes managers so difficult to ask for help. and it's a combination. Yeah. It is the environment. It's the society we grew up in. And, you know, we put leaders on pedestal. And second is self-inflicted. We don't want to look like, you know, we don't know it.
Ritu, is there a cultural divide here? For example, are Asians in the C-suite or in upper management a different kind of coachee than, let's say, someone from the West, from Europe, from North America? Is there any difference there? And if so, what is it?
That's a great question. And I see that because I've by now coached, you know, leaders from at least 20 plus countries. And I do see the cultural nuances. Leaders in Asia are now, I would definitely say, are willing to open up more than probably 5 years. So there is a little bit more acceptance of coaching.
Yeah.
But there is still that thing of they don't want people to know maybe they have a coach. So a lot of times I coach leaders in some really nice coffee shops or five-star hotels.
You have to walk in the back door or out the back door.
Yeah, so they don't want me in the office. It's like, oh, let's meet for coffee. So it's a coffee discussion rather than
you're
saying,
so nice. Why couldn't they have you just come in the office? I mean, really.
So that's the cut. Whereas I think from the West, like Europe or US, when they are pretty open to say, yeah, I have a coach, you know, and she's my coach. Like if somebody meets me, they'll say, yeah, she's my coach.
It's almost a badge of honor in some ways.
Exactly. Yeah. And also there's almost a pride in saying the company is investing in me. Versus in Asia, I still find where people think, oh, if my company is getting me a coach, is there something wrong with me? So that's changing.
Yeah. Let's talk about Leader's Block, your book, How Great Leaders Recover After They Stumble. You know, nobody's perfect. Everybody makes mistakes. And especially sometimes those mistakes are not self-inflicted. They are, you know, because of circumstances in the business environment. Of course, we're seeing our current business environment become more challenging literally by the day. Tell me about the book. What was the genesis for the book?
Right. So the book, you know, the title Leader's Block is taken from Writer's Block. Mm. So I've just stolen that word, replaced it with Leader's Block. And the concept is same. Just as writers in their journey go through a phase when they are unable to produce best of their work, they're not at their creative best. Similarly, it talks about leaders in their leadership journey when they go through a phase when they're not at their best, when they're not performing on top of their game.
Mm.
And which could be a combination. Sometimes it could be your metrics are all green, but internally you know that's not your top game.
Right.
Sometimes it shows up in the external performance too. So it could be a combination of that. So that's really the genesis. I mean, the title genesis.
Yeah.
Now, what led me to it was, again, going back to my own journey of being a leader and also all these leaders that I coached, I realized everybody goes through a phase like this, right? But nobody is talking about it. Nobody is being open about it because, one, maybe we didn't have a name for it. So people said, oh, you know, like I'm not feeling very great or I'm not, you know, I'm getting into the funk, you know, the famous American term of saying getting into the funk. But funk is really for 2-3 days. But if that funk continues for weeks and months, we needed something to describe that. And my hope is that, you know, with Leader's Block, we have a phrase that people can refer and use and say, oh, listen, I think I'm going through a leader's block, which will make it a little more easy for them to acknowledge.
Some of the signs might be obvious, but take us through what the basic signs. If you're a leader, how you know if you're in this. Now, you probably already know anyway, but what did you find from your research in writing the book? Because you interviewed over 200 people for this, right?
That's correct.
So what are some of the classic signs of leader's block?
Okay, so as you said earlier that, you know, each leader is unique and everybody had their different ways of, you know, of recognizing it. But if I were to put it broadly, like in 3 or 4 points, one is the level of disengagement or boredom at work. If that continues to increase over a period of time, you know, it could be, like I said, weeks or months and months, then you know something, right? So you're not enjoying your work. I'll give you a small example. A very senior leader told me, I would come into office, and he said, I would look at, it would be 9 a.m., and I would just open Facebook. And he said, when I continue to do that, and then I was like, gosh, something is wrong.
There must be a problem here.
Exactly. And this is like a very senior leader. And again, it's a small thing. You might think, yeah, Facebook, you know, but it's 9 a.m.
But if you're doing that at 9 a.m. rather than something else,
exactly. You know, then you know something. Sure. The other thing is the narrative. You know, if you find yourself becoming more cynical, skeptical, oh, this will never work, or it's always been done like this, I've been there, done there, you know, like shunning all new ideas, you know, that cynicism is getting onto you and you're just shutting down, right?
Okay, so how do we get out of it? How do we break the leader's block? Once we've determined, yep, we've got it, how do we get rid of it?
Yeah, it's a very simple thing. Remember the
besides,
word.
Besides reading the book, of course.
Yes, of course.
Shameless plug. No,
so, yeah. So the five words. If you remember the word block, you in the word block are five strategies to overcome the block. Okay. So very quickly, the B is for big picture. Step back, look at the big picture, get a bigger, bigger perspective. The L is for let it pass. Sometimes the best thing you can do is to let it pass, because what you can't control, you can't control. You know, you can't control the economy. You can't control the environment. So sometimes you just have to let things pass.
Yep.
The O is for opinions. Opinions of people who matter to you and to whom you matter, you know, because they pick up symptoms and things before you do. The C is for change. There's no running away from that. Mm. Whether it means changing your behavior, changing the way you work, or even changing your role or changing your job. It could be anything.
Mm.
And the K is for kinship, having that network of advisors, mentors, coaches who can guide you and help you through.
You make it sound very simple.
It is very simple.
How long does it take somebody generally? Is there, can you say, hey, within, if you follow the block strategy in leader's block, it, you know, within a month or two, you should be better. Is it, can you say that? I know everyone's different, but.
Yeah, I would say 3 to 6 months because look, you're talking about working on all of this on humans, right?
It's a lot, yeah.
And sometimes that's the most difficult thing to do, work on yourself.
Yeah.
So I would say 3 to 6 months.
Tell us about the process of putting a book together. Some of our listeners may be either thinking about writing a book or in the process of it. You had great success doing it. What steps did you go through?
Oh, thanks, Glenn, for asking that. Because, yeah, as you said earlier, I came from a very corporate. And I say very corporate because P&G and GE are very corporate, you know, as corporate as they can
just
get.
Just about as corporate as you can get.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I came from companies like that where, you know, my previous experience with writing was just writing emails, right? So
yeah.
So it was a huge leap from going from writing emails to writing a book.
So you went from emails to 220, 50, 60 pages.
That's correct.
Nice. That's a lot of emails.
Yes, that's a lot of emails. So the reason I share that is because there's a lot of hope for business people,
okay,
right?
Sure.
And business people think, oh, like, you know, we're not creative, we don't have the thing, so we can't write. So, you know, jumping into, you know, some of the things that worked for me, there are 3 steps, actually, I would say. So the first thing was really identifying your topic. That's very important because what happens is you tend to get swayed by what's trendy, what's in these days, what everybody is talking about, you know, whether it's disruption, transformation. So there's this whole inherent thing to go after a topic like that. But I would say select your topic that's yours, where you are the best person to write it. You know, you have the right experience. So even deciding on the topic becomes very important because then the ease of writing or the process is so much more because you own.
Because you're into it, right?
Exactly.
Like
and
anything.
You own it. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so figure out the topic. That's number one.
Yeah. The number two is do your research. You know as much as you know. You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
So go and talk to people. In my case, I spoke to 200 leaders. You know, it took a long time, but it was absolutely worth it.
How did you get them all to say yes?
Yeah.
You just send emails or like what's that process
Great question. So what I did was I started with 10, 20 leaders that I kind of knew in my network and I reached out to them.
Sure.
And when I interviewed them and I said, if you enjoyed this, can you connect me to 2 more people?
Ah.
And invariably, out of those initial 10, everybody connected me to 2 more people.
Wow.
And out of that, if 70% also said, then again, I asked them, introduce me to 2 more people.
Mm.
So it just went, the net started to becoming bigger and bigger.
Mm.
And also what that does it, and that this is something that actually our listeners should pay attention to, is that don't always go for your first degree of association. because those people will tell you the truth but may not tell you all the truth. You want second or third or fourth degree of association because you get a lot more out there. They don't know you.
They're
you
more
don't
willing
know them.
To open up. Huh?
They're willing to open
That's
up.
It's kind of counterintuitive, isn't it?
Very counterintuitive.
Yeah.
But I realize that in the process. And yeah. I even now, if I'm doing research on any topic, I always reach out to a second or a third degree associate.
How long did each interview take? Was it like a 10-minute, 20-minute? Because that's 200 people. That's a lot of time invested.
Yes. So what I started with, the first 100 interviews were more extensive. So they were about 30 to 45 minutes each. Yes, that took a lot of time.
Yeah.
But then the next 100 were more quicker because I was very specific on the questions I wanted to ask and on the data I wanted to collect to verify my hypothesis.
Yeah.
So I divided it into two parts.
So you learn a lot as you go along through these interviews,
correct.
What the questions are you need to ask,
That's
and
right.
by extension, the questions you really don't need
Absolutely.
To ask.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you figured out the topic. You
yes.
did all these interviews, this
yes.
research. By the way, how long did that research process take?
Yeah, research topic was about a year.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
It's a year.
Okay.
I mean, I would say, but in parallel, you start writing. So it's not like you wait for all your interviews.
Sure.
So once you've got your 20, 30 interviews, you've already started writing.
Mm.
You know, some kind of trend starts to emerge. And before that, you have your little bit of your outline of the book. So you start filling in, right?
Okay. What's next after your interviews, your research?
The third thing is, I know it might be very obvious, but it is don't try and do it all yourself. Please reach out to people. So let me give you an example. Throughout my journey, from the time I got a title to doing the research, I had a mentor by me. And it's, you know, a lot of listeners may know his name, but he's one of the most popular and well-known international keynote speaker, Frederick Harran.
Yep.
He's my mentor. So I reached out
He was
out
here
to
last
him.
Week, as a matter of fact, on the
Perfect.
Show. Perfect,
so
yes.
You go. and the other thing is I reached out to a book coach. Now, I know to a lot of people, I'll say, what is that? But I did a research and I realized that, you know, there are coaches who help you through your journey of the book. And like I said, I'm not an expert. Mm. I wasn't an expert at writing, so I know I need help.
Yeah.
So I got a book coach. So I reached out to the best yep. in their fields and took the help, you know.
And you put it all together. How long did it take you from starting the research to actually getting the copy in your hand?
Yeah, the process of getting the title to the book was 2 years.
Yep.
In fact, exactly 2 years. And also just to add this, I know, you know, a lot of listeners kind of think when they're putting together their title, oh, should we go to a publisher or not? I'll say it's worth it. I got really lucky to have Penguin, you know, take me on as the author. But again, it is you reach out. I got in touch with Penguin through a third degree of association.
Yep.
I didn't know them. So leverage your network. And the third is please reach out for the right mentors, coaches, people who've done it before. So don't try and figure it out yourself.
What would you do differently or what will you do differently on your second book? How will you? Can you compress that 2-year timeline? Where are the hacks that you could employ to
I
do
think
it faster?
My next book, I would definitely do it faster. Because also the whole interviewing and getting all that content, condensing it, putting it in structure, that I think I'm much better at now. There's a process.
Yeah.
Like as you were saying earlier, ask the right questions. Initially, my interviews were like really lengthy, huge transcripts, and then going through it. I didn't record some of my earlier interviews, so which is then I started becoming smarter by recording. So things like that.
Yeah.
I guess I've learned quite a bit. The process can definitely be shortened.
Now, once you got this done, of course, the work is just beginning, really, because you got to get out there and promote the thing.
Right.
And I know you've been in India, you've been all over Southeast Asia promoting this book and beyond. How does that process work? Did you do it all? Did Penguin, your publisher, do it? Because that is really the next most important phase of this.
That's right. And I must say that for people who are in the process of publishing or who are thinking of publishing, the marketing of the book is as much, if not less, work than actually writing it.
Okay.
So while Penguin has helped me, you know, because they have a broad network,
yep.
but as an author, you've got to take the baby out and introduce it to the world. You know, somebody very nicely said to me that it's like, you know, you've got the baby out now, so, now, you know, instead of 9 months, it was 2 years of pregnancy, you get the book out, and now you've got to show off your kid to the to the world. Which sometimes may not be the best thing.
How many public appearances do you reckon you've done? Book signings or readings or standing in coffee shops or whatever it is you've had to do? Can you even guesstimate?
it'll be difficult to count because if I think about India, I did this 4-city tour one time and then 2-city tour, and which is anybody who's been to India knows that, you know, the traffic and the cities are quite crazy.
Yeah.
So I've done that. I've done in Southeast Asia, starting to do in Malaysia now. We've done it in Indonesia.
So at least dozens, though. Dozens.
Oh, yeah,
of times.
More than dozens. Yeah. More than dozens, yeah. And somebody told me, my publisher told me, if you're not going to be passionate talking about your book, who else would? So every time you really have to hold it with a lot of pride. And that's why I'm here talking about it so shamelessly, right?
You know, from a mechanical standpoint, does the publisher pay for all the travel and all those expenses? Or do you have to incur those in hope that you'll get it back on the back end of sales or speaking engagements? Or how does that work?
It's a combination.
Yeah,
they pick up a little bit of it, but not all. Because remember, publishing houses, again, work on very tight marketing budgets. But now with social media, a lot of your cost can be minimized, you know, because you put it out there on Facebook, on LinkedIn. So a lot of my engagement for the book actually comes through social media, too.
Yeah,
so,
of course. Ritu, any last words of advice for somebody thinking about doing a book?
Just do it. That's it.
Wonderful. Ritu Marish, international keynote speaker, executive coach, author of Leader's Block. Thanks for being with us this morning on Money FM.
Thanks, Glenn, for having me. I enjoyed myself talking to your listeners.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.